Someone has mixed an Amazing Spider-Man in with the Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man series. This will not stand.
Pardon me, but I wish to tender a serious cash offer for this stack of water-damaged little Lulus.
A, that is not water, it is Diet Mr. Pibb. And B, I... Ooh.
Tell me, how do you feel about 45-year-old virgins who still live with their parents?
Comb the sweet tarts out of your beard and you're on.
Don't try to change me, baby.
TBTL!
This stuff is so funny, by the way.
Did the comic come up with this? Because some of the stuff, like, I feel like I could see somebody doing in their act. Right? A duck that's friends with a monkey who he can't swim? That's hilarious. That's, like, something I would do. I would be like, you know, could you imagine yourself being like a duck, but you don't even want to get in the water? Yeah, that's the way I feel every day when I hop on the 48 freeway.
Are you taking my duplication investigation seriously? Or are you disrespecting my duplication investigation?
Isn't there a slanket somewhere you should be feeling with your farts?
How does it feel like? I'm serious, how does it feel like? I've only seen one person ever have it as much as you currently do.
Your vocals are amazing.
I think it's just the combination of our voices is what works. They literally become one.
I'm talking about duping. Duping! Okay. Duplication! Show me how this duplicating machine works. I want to learn all about the process.
That's not all you're going to learn on this Thursday afternoon, my friends, because you have happened upon another edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank, coming to you from the Hotel Deluxe in Portland, Oregon. Got the Mr. Coffee Machine whirring away. God, you know, we're having all this work done on our house, where I usually broadcast from. There's banging and sawing when I'm up in Bellingham, Washington. And then I come down here to Portland to do the Livewire radio show. And what kind of a dingus am I? I set the coffee machine up literally right next to the microphone. Apologies, everyone. But if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know this is nothing new. I actually think this coffee machine might be getting ready to blow. It is going into some kind of overdrive that doesn't seem good. Okay, anyway, fingers crossed. Let's try to get through this next hour of imaginary radio together. It's episode 2363 in a collector's series. We want to tell you about a guy named Captain Calamity, who has declared a rock that apparently has a couple of otters, some seagulls, and a lean-to shelter off the coast of the Shetland Islands in the north of Britain. He's declared this rock to be its own sovereign nation. He's made his own license plates, and he's got about 200 people to join him in the idea of Forvik. So we'll talk about that. And I got to say, this story in the New York Times about people who surf at night is full of dazzling details about why you would go into the inky black ocean waters in the nighttime to do your surfing. It also helped me generate what I think is probably the greatest slug, you call it in journalism, headline. It's just for me and Andrew to reference. For the night surfing story, I wrote, "Night surfing deserves a quiet night." Very, very proud of that spoof. So we'll talk about that, too. We'll do some emails and v-mails. We'll see if this coffee machine blows up. And we'll welcome this young man to the show, the Hodor of podcasting. He bought a balloon, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than everyone else. And his drawings of tall ships, I have to say, they're known for their grace and splendor. They're also known for their elegant simplicity, now by me, because of something that comes up in the TBTL newsletter video, which you all will see tomorrow when the newsletter comes out. And if you have not signed up for it right now, please go to tbtl.net and sign yourself up for the newsletter. It's going to be amazing. Anyway, he's this guy, Andrew Walsh, joining us from the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my dude.
Hello, Luke Burbank. Try to do a thing where I could... Oh, maybe I can. Maybe I can. Do you want to just... maybe I should keep my powder dry, as you say, and keep the night swimming for the segment.
God, I love this song.
It is a good song, isn't it?
Man, I haven't heard this song in years. What album is that off of?
I want to say Automatic for the People. Let me see here.
Man, why have I not listened to R.E.M. in a long time, man? Green. I loved Green. Green was one of a very short list of cassette tapes that I had in my Honda Civic at one point. I also had I believe I had Cypress Hill Black Sunday and REM's Green. I think those were a couple of them, and I just wore those tapes out.
I loved the 1993 collaboration between Cypress Hill and three of the members of REM. That was an interesting combination of styles, I want to say. That was actually, I stalled out there. I was trying to think of a spoof, failed, leaving it in.
I wouldn't put it past Peter Buck.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, you really did see a lot of dumbass or maybe brilliant kind of combinations of music, right? In the 90s, wasn't that a big part of our generation? Wasn't there a whole soundtrack to some movie that, like, combined artists that you wouldn't think should be playing together, like Rage Against the Machine and Jewel or something like that?
What?
Okay, not that one in
that
particular.
That I would pay money to hear for a very short amount of time.
You have any idea what the album is I'm talking about? It was like, it wasn't like Dr. Doom. It was some sort of a...
I don't know about this album.
Is the moment where you should throw your phone.
Unlikely collaborators, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm going to keep thinking about this during the show, and okay, eventually good. I'm going to come up with it.
I'm going to tell a story about the time I saw Michael Stipe in Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Okay.
That's pretty much the story.
You know, it's good. I mean, I think we should madman it a little bit more and just kind of think about what the power out is. But I don't want to, like, you know, we're madmanning now. We don't want to
No bad ideas, trademark.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
He also trademarked no bad ideas. I was in Prospect Park and I was having a little picnic lunch and I looked over and there was Michael Stipe sitting there. But I have to tell you, he is very, at least at this time, he was very fit and looked very strong, and that's why I didn't think it was Michael Stipe, because, like, I consider him to be that waifish guy in the corner, that guy in the spotlight losing his religion. And so I kept saying, that's definitely – by the way, can you hear that coffee machine?
Yeah, what's going on over there? Are you okay?
Nothing good. I don't know. It's like a horror movie. I think it's done. I think it's dead, and then it comes back to life.
I hear it. I hear it. It does sound a little bit like a ticking pot.
Well, at least it's only a thing that is heating up water and building steam and pressure mere inches from my face. At least that's all that's going on.
I'm sure everything will be fine.
But anyway, then it turns out it was, in fact, Michael Stipe. And still don't feel like that's a strong power out.
Let me ask you this. Let me keep probing. Let's just keep on trying until something happens with the beginning of the show here. I said the inside part outside. Were you at all tempted to go up to him? Did you have any kind of internal struggle about this? What year again is this?
This would have been like 2005 or something.
Okay. So it was part of you kind of like, oh, that is Michael Stipe. I should. What are you? You're a big time New York City radio host at this point? Bryant Parking it up?
I do have a show there at this time, but nobody's heard of it.
Okay.
You know? It's not like he was going to go, oh, yes, the Bryant Park Project. You know what? Because Michael Stipe seemed like a complicated figure to me, I don't think I had the thought to go up and talk to him. It would be like trying to go up and talk to Andy Warhol. Or, you know, actually, there was a moment this week, actually, at the end of last week, where I was maybe going to have to do a profile for TV of David Byrne from Talking Heads, which ended up not happening. And I'll be totally honest with you, I was mildly relieved because I was like, he is – just seems like a guy who would be really challenging to talk to. And that's not – no – I'm not saying anything bad about Michael Stipe. I just – he's not the kind of celebrity that I'd be like – I'd want to run up and be like, hey, Michael Stipe, because I just feel like that would be met with – him just kind of looking at me like, what are you doing?
Yeah, him especially. I mean, in interviews and stuff, he's pretty dire. I think there was a dour. There was a time when there were certain songs he wouldn't even talk about. He's a little persnickety about that stuff. I get the impression he might have mellowed out a little bit. I heard an interesting interview with him on whatever the Canadian show they play on KUOW here in Seattle around 8 or 9 at night or something.
Yes.
Not the weekend one. Q? Is it? No, that's
not
the weekend.
Maybe it's Q. Is it hosted by Tom Powers? Or is it maybe Day One hosted by Brent Banbury?
I think it's Q. Yeah, I think it might be Q.
Is it As It Happens, hosted by some other people?
Yeah, it's not As It Happens, and I don't think it's not Branberry because he's a weekend guy. Anyway, he seemed like Michael Stipe seemed a little bit more chill and actually was reflective about his dourness early on. Like, there were a couple of songs that he wrote that he absolutely hated, like Shiny Happy People, and I think another, like, what's the really poppy one off of Green? Something.
Oh, Stand.
Well, there was Stand, and then there was another one, like, I think it's just called Pop Song 89 or something like that. And I think there was a period where he wouldn't even talk about them. And now he's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, listen, they're fine songs. They're like children's songs. By the way, the album I was trying to think of before was the Judgment Night soundtrack. Is any of this coming back to you when I say that?
I didn't know. I vaguely remember the movie Judgment Night, but I didn't realize the soundtrack had a bunch of like, you know, sort of collaborations of unlikely artists.
Let me read some of them to you, and I now have it up on the Spotify too. So if you want to hear any,
about the Michael Stipe interview before we move on. Did he mention that time he saw me in Prospect Park in Brooklyn? Did that make the final version of the interview, or do you think that got cut out?
I didn't hear you mentioned by name. I also didn't know this story at the time. So what I would like to do is maybe go back and listen, figure out what show I heard
tomorrow.
It on. Yeah. By tomorrow?
It'd be great.
Okay.
Some feedback on that.
You're not on the show tomorrow, right?
That's right. I'm actually off tomorrow because I have to go to a board meeting, the LiveWire board. I wonder if I'm being fired, and I wonder if I care. No, I have to go to a board meeting tomorrow and also meet with the folks from the distributor for LiveWire, which is Public Radio International.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a series of high-level food-related meetings tomorrow.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with
and
that.
And so you're gonna run things, and you're going to run things with – can we tell everybody?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe we'll get some
– Public Radio's Barbara Bogave, which is
that's
awesome.
Right. She's literally one of my favorite people in the world, and I was texting with her while you and I were emailing about our options for Friday, or you were saying, I don't know if I can make Friday, and then I was texting with her, and so I was just like, hey, do you just want to do this with me? And she is she's a fascinating woman, man. She's literally one of my favorite people, so that should be fun. Now, the question is, will she be upset that I blew the whole Judgment Night soundtrack bit on Thursday's show when she's coming up on Friday? And of course, this is probably something.
I'm not looking at this, obviously, but let me try to guess at who collaborated for the Judgment Night soundtrack.
Do you want me to give you
one
and then you give me the other one?
I definitely feel like Ice-T was involved.
I bet you $1 million Ice-T was involved. Ice-T did a song called Disorder. Who did he do it with? Whom did he do it with?
Okay. What was the plot of Judgment Night?
Let me figure this out. I have to click on the link to film of the same name. 1993 American action thriller film, directed by Stephen Hopkins, starring Emilio Estevez and Cuba Gooding Jr. Jeremy Piven apparently did not have food poisoning. As a group of friends on the run from a gang of drug dealers led by Dennis Leary after they witness a murder. So
I'd run away from Dennis Leary, but just because I would be afraid that he'd try to make me listen to his comedy.
I know. God, or his Ford truck commercials. What's worse?
Get a Ford truck.
Yeah. You're a man. You're a man.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Men don't drive Yaris's. Sorry, I made that one a little personal.
That went to a really personal place.
Yeah, it really did.
Okay. So they're running away from some drug dealers led by Dennis Leary.
Mm-hmm.
And coffee machine. Really, I'm just unplugging it. I'm just unplugging it, Andrew. That's what I'm doing.
Did you get any coffee out of it?
I did. I'm good. I'm fine on that, I think. Okay. Ice-T probably collaborated with I don't think these guys were around. Not like System of a Down, but some kind of like real metal, like.
Yeah.
What year was it again?
So this is 1993, but you would associate this act with actually earlier days.
Metallica?
Closer, but less classy.
Closer, but less classy. Possible show title. Writing that down on a Hotel Deluxe. Oh, by the way, remind me to tell you how I'm being basically extorted by a listener regarding the Hotel Deluxe.
Oh, I do want to hear about that. Yeah, sorry.
What did you say? Something but classy? What?
Let's see. Closer, but classy?
Closer, but less classy, right?
Yes, closer but less classy. Do you want to take one more guess?
Is it a metal band?
Yeah. It is a metal band.
What's that app you were using? Can we get that?
Akinator.
Can we get Akinator on the case?
Is their hair longer or shorter than James Hetfield's?
Okay, so it's not Metallica, but it's similar to that. So it's like a Guns N' Roses.
I'm going to give it to you, Slayer.
I could have given you one more guess. My brain had moved on, but my initial thought was probably friggin' Slayer.
Yep, Ice-T. It was always pairing up with some sort of bad heavy metal.
He's got some band called like Body Count.
That's right. That was the whole thing.
He's actually just released an album, and I don't know why I know that. But
really, they got back to well. Anyway, that is not for me. Who do you think Pearl Jam collabed with?
How we save time.
This one will surprise you less. Cypress Hill, which is how I think I got on this whole thing. You got Dinosaur Jr. getting down with Del the Funky Homo Sapien. That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually could be a thing.
You have Seattle's own Sir Mix-a-Lot mixing it up with Seattle's own Mudhoney.
Mudhoney's from Seattle,
right? They're both Seattle.
Yeah. Anthony Ray, a.k.a. Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Probably the reason I even know about this is I was a big Sonic Youth fan. They also teamed up with Cypress Hill to write a song that probably has nothing to do with drugs called I Love You, Mary Jane. Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's probably a nice guy. I bet you he'd be fun to hang out with. But Be Real needs to really get some new frigging material. We get it. You enjoy the weed.
I do wonder if like legalization has put a damper on his creativity. Right. Is this even playing anymore? Oh, here we go. Let's just get a little taste of this here.
This is Cypress Hill and Sonic Youth.
Yeah. I mean, there is a chance there is just a woman named Mary Jane who he's got a huge crush on. Wow. Do MP3 skip? What's that? Rock comes back on the program, hooking up another fly
joint when I float on the slow jam. Every Be Real rap sounds exactly the same.
I know, yet I won't lie. Hearing that,
I kind of like it.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I definitely had my time with him. The thought that I had was the listeners are lucky that we're not doing that thing where we just keep randomly assigning different songs. As the underpinning for their donation thing.
Right.
I think that Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill would have made an appearance.
Yes, and we could have just replaced Mary Jane with whatever the listeners' names were.
You think like when B-Real like gets ready to write a song, he's like, okay, this is going to be the one that's not about weed. I love you, Mary Jane. Okay, it's going to be about weed.
He's like, no, scrap it. I can do this. Okay, what did I have for dinner last night?
Just like on his right side is just like a huge gravity bong, and on his left side is just 1,000 crumpled up pieces of paper where he started writing songs that weren't about weed.
Right. And every single one just slips right back into it.
Yeah, exactly. Just,
that is my imitation of a bong hit. Thank you.
That's also the interstitial sound on every Cypress Hill record.
It is.
That would be an amazing SNL sketch for like 7 people, me and you being 2 of them.
Right.
The guy from Cypress Hill and his battle to write a song that's not about marijuana. Oh, and by the way, Andrew, today's 420.
Oh, how perfect was this?
Dude,
this was not planned, people.
It really wasn't, but I don't know what's happening to me, but I got pretty wigged out about, what was it, Ice Maybe. We tried to name two shows Ice Maybe exactly 100 episodes apart without trying to do that intentionally. Today, how often do we talk about weed on this show? Almost never. And we just came up with a killer sketch idea.
Yeah, we did.
Be Real trying to write. And it's 420, my dude.
I know. Hey, my favorite bumper sticker. It's 419. Got a minute?
I saw a story on – I don't know why I was watching the local television news yesterday, but I was actually kind of – it's weirdly comforting in a way watching local TV news because – you know what I mean? Because I think when you're a kid, your parents tend to watch it.
Yep.
Like it would be a terrifying place to get most of your news, not even because I think it's wrong, but it's just the – what they tend to cover I think is usually not the stuff that's that important. That being said – It is kind of, it has, I don't know. I'm sitting there with Carrie watching the news at like 5 in the afternoon, just kind of like, oh, this is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big story about a drive-through pot store in Colorado. And it was this whole, you know, sort of, it was a whole controversy. And I thought, like, you know, because they have recreational marijuana in Colorado now. And I was like, you can drive up to the store. You can walk in. You can buy your nugs. You can go back in your car. You can drive away. How big of a deal is it that you can also now just drive up to a window and have them hand you your nugs?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask because I feel that way about every drive-through service. I feel that way about fast food restaurants, and I certainly feel that way about drive-through like booze stores. There was one of those in Arizona right by where I was staying, as a matter of fact, and I went in and I got a six-pack, but I did not drive through. I did not need to drive through and have the beer handed to me through a window.
But what's weird is the reason you don't like drive-thrus, if I remember right, is because you were taught, you know, you're from a family that didn't go to drive-thrus because of concern about spilling food in the car.
I think maybe. I also just think that my dad, I mean, my mom would take us through drive-thrus. My dad wouldn't. I think, and mostly I'd probably be, in any case that we're eating fast food, I was probably with my mom. I think it's just that, I think it's a little bit more nature than nurture than that with me. I think me and my dad are just the type of guys who don't like going through drive-thrus.
Here's what's going on with me currently at the Hotel Deluxe, Andrew. One of the tens of listeners, somebody who is named, I believe, Lissa, came and happened to stay at the Hotel Deluxe and tweeted at me that she had mentioned me to the staff here because I stay here like almost every week. I love this place. It's my favorite hotel in America, and the staff is the best hotel staff anywhere I've ever been. I love this place. But this is what Lissa said and did. She goes, 4 out of 5 Hotel Deluxe people think you are the bomb. I'll tell you who the fifth is if you introduce me to Misha Collins.
Whoa.
So that's like, I got to know which Hotel Deluxe employee does not think I'm the bomb, but that means I have to introduce this listener to Misha Collins of the television show Supernatural.
First of all, it seems like an invasion of Misha's kind of personal space to be using him as leverage here, Lissa. I'm talking to you.
Yes, but I obviously will have to make this happen because I need to know which one of those people at the front desk does not think that I am da bomb.
Would you feel – yeah, because I guess – let's just say that you leave it be, right? But let's say that you leave
have
it
you
be.
Have you met us?
Then you're going to – every single time you're at the front desk, you're going to, I guess, probably assume that the person behind the counter is number 5, right? The one who's not down with your routine. And so, of course, maybe what will come of this is you're just going to be nicer to all of them or meaner to all of them.
I feel that I'm as nice as can be because the staff here is like – they're beyond gracious. Not in – by the way, not in the Portlandia sense because there was actually – Portlandia shoots in this hotel somewhat frequently. And they had a sketch where Fred Armisen plays a Hotel Deluxe employee and he's doing that thing that happens at kind of nicer hotels now where they over-explain everything to you. I think that what happened – and that's – interestingly enough, that it is not what happens here at the Hotel Deluxe. But Fred Armisen's character is like following her up to the room, showing her how to hang clothes up on the – you know, like on a hanger in a closet, like explaining every single detail of the room in a way that is not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that a lot of hotels in America have decided that they're – that the sort of difference maker for them is going to be excellent customer service. And so usually when I get to a hotel – I'm just like tired from traveling. I just want to get the key card and go up to the hotel room and watch Forensic Files.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it all comes from a good place, but I feel like I spend a lot of my life standing at a hotel counter nodding going, yeah, yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, yeah. I know where the – thank you. I don't need to know the hours of the continental breakfast. I mean, again, this is I'm probably the jerk in this scenario because they're just trying to be helpful and they're just trying to give me the relevant information. But it's like – sometimes they'll just give you that litany of stuff and you're just like, I don't need to hear any of this right now.
I have less experience with that. I'm more of a DoubleTree guy, as we were talking about yesterday. But
yeah, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that place is – I think I've stayed there before. I'm excited because we're going to be going to Minnesota to hang out with the folks at the Mothership and work on the MPR pledge drive, my
dude. That's right. I'm getting my producer shoes back on. I have these special fundraiser producer shoes that I haven't been able to wear. No, that used to be my jam, man. When I was back in New Hampshire, I was Mr. Fund Drive producer, and I loved it. And now we work with Amy Wu, let's see, what would even be, she is the Goliath to my David as far as fundraising producing goes. So I'm going to, she's
Wait a
my
sec.
Boss for
You guys
a week.
Are fighting?
Well, I don't
You're
know
gonna
for sure.
You're going to try to kill her with a rock?
Here's the deal, Luke. I don't want to, and I don't like fighting, but I don't know. I'm going to be going with a slingshot because I don't know, I guess a sling really.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sling, not a slingshot, right?
Yeah, it was a sling. It was like, it was a wrist rocket.
Okay, well, I'm gonna be showing up with a sling, a slingshot, and a wrist rocket branded slingshot, and just because you never know what happens, and you know, public radio fund drives, they get messy.
So we're gonna be there, and that's awesome. But we're also booking our travel, and it's funny because you and I are we're totally different, and I wish I was more like you, Andrew. In this way, but I'm not. Like if you're looking in the travel tool and there are like like nicer hotels and when I say the travel tool, it's like the website we're supposed to use to set this kind of stuff up. If there's like a nicer hotel and it's in there and they're like, this is one of the hotels we use, I'm like, damn straight. And I'm not trying to put you on blast, but I find this is actually really endearing. Can I say on the show? I'm asking you permission. Sure. You could edit this out if you want.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm asking you permission for a thing that you have way more control over than I do ultimately. But you called up Amy and who's putting this thing together and basically said, like, I don't need anything as fancy as is being offered here. Is there anything a little more affordable? Which again, what a good employee. And when this show is canceled, they will definitely retain you for something.
Yeah, but well, maybe I'll get a job at the Hotel DoubleTree.
But there's no way that I am going to, you know, like, I don't know what's on the list. I haven't even looked, but let's say, and again, that being said, that DoubleTree, if I'm thinking of the same one, is like physically connected to the radio station. It's awesome. I've stayed there
it's
before.
Nice. Yeah, it's fine.
But like, had you decided like, hey, Amy, I'm going to go, I'm going to go with a Motel 6. Peace and love to our friend Tom Baudet. Voice of Motel 6 commercials. But like, if you do that, there's no way I can be like, well, I'm staying.
Right. Like, no, it really puts you in a,
you have really at that point made the decision for both of us.
Well, you got star power though. And I don't really have that kind of star power. So that's fine. You can wield that. I think it's probably, I don't know for sure, but, and this is with all due respect and love for my first, like, several bosses actually in my professional career, kind of post-college career at New Hampshire Public Radio, they were kind of cheap. I mean, especially New Hampshire Public Radio, like it's a public radio station that is beloved in that community, but fundraising in a small New England, quote unquote, flinty state is difficult. So, you know, New Hampshire Public Radio, and that being the place where I really kind of, you know, cut my teeth and of kind of being a, you know, professional public radio person, I was used to very, very thin budgets and very cheap program directors who didn't really kind of like want to spend a lot of money on my travel and stuff like that. So I think that probably has a lot to do with my attitude now, because I'm sure if I live to be 100 and work for whatever companies, radio or otherwise, I will always be like, you don't need to spend that much money on me. And I it's not an act. Like, I really don't care. Like, the amount of time I spend in a hotel, you know what I love the most in any hotel I stay in? If it's got a good little desk I can set up my laptop on and a couple of microphones for you and me to do the show. I love having a little like portable studio. But aside from that, it's fine. As long as there's some air conditioning and some very basic cable and no bugs. Like, I just don't want it to be gross, but I'll stay anywhere.
See, that's good. I admire that because I'm the kind of person that I don't even want anything from the Continental Breakfast, but if I walk past it and I see all that stuff and I know it's there available to me, I'm like filling my pockets up with stale bagels or something because I'm like, I must have this because it's out there. And you could probably walk past and be like, yeah, I don't need any of that right now. Like, I just – if it can be attained, I tend to want to attain it. I guess that's not really attainment as much as it's just I want to get my grubby paws on everything. But the big problem is I don't know what time the Continental Breakfast is here. They never tell me when I check in.
So they're in Portland.
It remains a mystery.
Because they haven't put that in. But anyway, yeah, let's go back to that for a second. So I've never had to like kind of sit, that I can remember, kind of sit there being in a hurry where people are giving you too much information at the desk. Let me ask you this, though. Have you been in a situation where somebody from the front desk or some sort of a, you know, like a porter or something, probably the wrong word there, will like walk you up to your room? Because that would make me seriously uncomfortable.
I don't care how many bags I have. I could have 35 pieces of luggage. Mm-hmm. I am never letting them help me with the luggage to the room because I do not want that situation to unfold.
That awkward tipping thing, you mean?
Well, a little bit of the tipping, just like, do I have, you know, the right denominations of cash or any cash on me at all? But also, I feel very weird with the hotel staff being in the space of the room that I am in. Mm. I don't know why. It's just like it feels extremely personal for all of us. In fact, I right before we did the show, I ordered a little bit of lunch, and because I didn't have time to go down and get it, I actually had them send it up here. And when the guys bring, you know, they bring the room service in, I stand in the doorway holding the door open mm-hmm. with my foot, holding the door completely open for the entirety of the transaction so the person does not feel in the slightest bit trapped in here with me.
Right. You know, the only time I've ever gotten room service like that was when we were actually staying, I want to say it was St. Paul. Yeah, you and I were doing our live St. Paul show. And you remember there was that one night, you get a little personal here. I was feeling pretty blue. A friend of mine had died recently. I didn't feel like going out. I think the basketball playoffs were on, the NBA basketball playoffs. Not that I'm really into that, but I think we're doing the live show the next day, and I just couldn't, you know? So I just wanted to stay in, get some food. And I had a couple of beers up there, and I was just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to splurge. I'm going to get room service, which I actually still do regret, by the way. Usually, you know how we talk about those things that are – they're ingrained in us from childhood that, like, this is a luxury. No matter how much money we have, we're not blowing money on this luxury. For some people, it's like ATM fees. F it. I'll find my own damn ATM with no fees. Or other people, it's like in the hotel, the wet bar or whatever. For me, it's always been room service. I'm like, oh, they're going to get you with a bunch of hidden fees. Turns out they really get you with a bunch of hidden fees that you don't find about until way later. Like
my soup and salad was fucking $30 today.
It's ridiculous. It's kind of like,
that happened.
Well, there's the delivery charge. And then, you know, you're going to tip, and then there's a delivery charge, and then there's there's like three different charges that all just go to the same place, which is the hotel. They just itemized the hell out of it. Anyway, I was not prepared for how uncomfortable I would be when the woman brought my food into my room. I got a hamburger and some fries, I think. And it's a routine. She knows what she's doing. She came in and she like flipped. I probably looked awkward. I didn't know what I was doing. And all of a sudden I realized I'm a kind of drunk guy in this room getting room service for the first time. I feel like I'm 10 years old. I don't know what to do. And also now I'm just feeling really awkward with a woman in my room. And she like kind of came in really quickly and like did, I can't remember exactly what she did with the door, but she did something funny with the door so that it would stay open.
Like I had a room service guy once bring in a baseball and wedge the baseball in the open door in the part of the door where the hinges are.
Really?
He clearly had done this before. He opens the door, he jams a baseball in, and then comes in and does his thing. And that was his little party trick. I thought it was kind of clever.
That is pretty clever. It wasn't like a baseball-related trip, right? This wasn't like spring training.
No,
or something.
No.
That'd be especially cool. Anyway, that was awkward.
So the lady did her thing and got out of there. But you wanted to try to send her a mental message that says, if there is the opposite of a Dominique Strauss-Kahn in the world, it is me right now.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I think like now I'm kind of embarrassed in telling this story because it doesn't paint me in the best light. But all I can tell you is I shouldn't have felt awkward, but I felt really awkward. And I just wanted every atom in my body to scream out to her, I'm okay. I'm okay. I promise. I know there's no reason you should believe that, but I am. And I don't know how to project that.
And if you want me to put on pants to prove it, I will.
I will go through if I must. But let's not be a baby about it.
Yes. We have a dazzling donor that we want to thank today, Andrew. If you could cue up our special dazzling donor sound effect. Today we're thanking DJ Moffitt of University Place, Washington. DJ donated to the last TBTL-a-thon, and that donation that he made, which was no small amount. So thank you, DJ. That is what helps us do the show. For the folks who dazzled us with their donations in this particular way, we've offered them a thank you of letting them kind of say whatever they want. They could write a little message that we will read. They could record an audio message if they want. They could promote their business or some kind of charity they may work with or whatever it is that they want to get out there. DJ chose to say, as a longtime listener and contributor, I'm not really sure what I'd like the guys to say about me or for me. I think I'll just let them wing it as always. That tends to be better than my ramblings, typically.
I got something to say about DJ.
Do you got another 12 minutes we can do on the Judgment Day soundtrack? Because I think that's what that's how DJ would have wanted it.
It's the, that would be J.D. Moffitt. This is DJ Moffitt.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
So DJ Judgment Day Moffitt. I will tell you this about him. He brought me.
Day Judgment Moffitt.
He brought me. He brought me a sandwich once. At Cairo Radio. That's right. There is a place near him that he loves their meats. And he said, I'm going to come visit you at Cairo, and I'm going to bring you some of the best meats. And he did bring me some of the best meats. So my point of that story is the dude just keeps giving and giving and giving.
He's bought me a drink before at the Nightlight. Now we're making DJ sound like Bill Brasky. Yeah. He drives an ice cream truck covered in human skulls. To DJ Moffitt!
To DJ Moffitt!
I want them to bring that skit back.
I know,
man,
I know.
That was so good. Well, DJ, thanks, man. Really, we do appreciate it, and always love seeing you at TBTL events and seeing you pop up on the old social media, interacting with us, and just being a generally awesome dude, man. So thank you so much, DJ. We could not do the show without you. I mean, that's a real statement. This episode, 2,363 in a collector series. Thanks to DJ.
To DJ Moffitt!
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story today, something I saw in the New York Times, the headline, A Lump of Rock, an Otter, and a Secessionist. This was by Stephen Castle. This is a really great piece of reporting, in my opinion. It says it's in the Shetland Islands, which is in the very north of Britain. With gray clouds building and rain slanting over the Atlantic, Stuart Hill pointed to a small lump of land inhabited by an otter, a few seals, and a variety of seabirds. To the rest of the world, this barren, inhospitable, and largely inaccessible rock off the coastline of the Shetland Islands is part of Scotland. To Mr. Hill, it is the sovereign state of Forvik, whose independence he proclaimed in 2008, arguing that it, along with the Shetland Islands themselves, is legally neither part of Scotland nor Britain. Needless to say, the authorities here do not agree. The police have confiscated three vehicles from Mr. Hill after he drove them with Forvik license plates that he designed himself. He has created a currency for Forvik. He has been selling, I don't want to say membership, but like citizenship in Forvik. 200 or so people have bought into Forvik. Now, the island of Forvik, the nation of Forvik, if this guy is to be believed, it doesn't have anything on it. It just has this weird, like, lean-to shelter that he built that is mostly just has probably otters living in at this point. He only goes out to Forvik a couple of times a year because it's, like, kind of hard to get to. But the craziest, maybe the craziest part of this, Andrew, is that as I read through the story, I realized he might not be wrong about who owns the Shetland Islands.
Is this where you you're going to offer legal representation?
Well, you're the amateur attorney at Walsh and Dormat.
This one might fall
on your plate. This is the argument. I would have never known this, of course, but Mr. Hill, who comes from England, would argue that the Shetlands are not Scottish at all, because I guess it's technically part of Scotland. I think I said Britain earlier. The islands were pawned to King James III of Scotland in 1469 by Christian I of Denmark and Norway in exchange for a wedding dowry for his daughter. To this day, however, historians struggle to identify a point at which they became legally Scottish. Hence Mr. Hill's case that the Shetlands belonged to neither Scotland or Britain. So what the New York Times reporter is pointing out here is that this guy is probably not wrong. They don't have any paperwork at any point that really says, oh, these islands are becoming Scottish. They just kind of – everyone was just kind of calling them Scotland. They were given away as part of some sort of dowry situation, and nobody has ever – really worked it out or figured it out. And this, he seems insane, but he might be the only sane person in the whole deal.
So yeah, I traded my daughter for the islands. They were mine. Well, but at this point, what year was that? That dowry situation supposedly happened?
That was back in like long, long ago. I want to say 1469.
Okay, yeah. So at this point, though, I mean, that was so many hundreds of years ago. I mean, does that kind of doesn't matter, right? Like, what court would you even try this in?
Well, that's the issue. I mean, somebody said later on in the piece that this guy is probably right about this, but he's 400 years too late.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Now, do we have any idea what the license plates look like?
That is what's killing me. I ended up doing a deep dive on The Guardian and other papers trying to get a picture of the license plate. I can tell you I haven't yet to see a picture of them, but I do have let me see. I'm trying to find where it is in the article. I have read a description of what they said.
Oh, good.
I believe they said all caps FREEZE123.
Free
ZE. By the way, they're vacuuming now outside mm-hmm. the
That's
hall
good.
Because
you
the coffee
like
machine's done, so now it's time for right. vacuuming.
Oh, I see. Free, yeah, so free, but it's free Z. Huh, I wonder why he chose
Z. I don't know what that, maybe that's something
yeah,
over there.
I don't know.
Free Z123, okay, homemade yeah. license plates. He said, by the way, he was driving this white Mercedes van around the Shetland Islands, which he claimed was the official vehicle of his republic. He also painted on the side of it the Sovereign State of Forvik, consular vehicle number 2. And he put his state flag on there, and then he put the he put his customized license plates on that as well.
That is kind of – isn't that the dream of a lot of kids? Because, like when I was a kid, this is what we did. We would build a fort in the backyard somewhere, or we would dig a hole in the woods somewhere and say this is our underground fort or whatever. But you never really complete the construction. Instead, the best part is the whole time just talking about like what are our code names going to be? What's our flag going to be like? What's your position? I'm always going to be the scribe. I don't know why, because I don't have a lot of other skills. You know what I mean? But like you always just kind of thinking up stuff. What is the license plate going to look like? What are we going to call our new territory? These are the things that children do. And frankly, I still want to do, but it's not socially acceptable. This man is grabbing the bull by the horns.
He really is. The reason that, by the way, they call him what's his nickname again? I've got too many screens up. The Captain of Calamity is because he showed up at the Shetlands. Again, he's British. He showed up not far from the Shetlands in the water where they had to save him because he was trying to sail this homemade yacht around England. And he kept capsizing and having to call the authorities.
Oh, no. He's not even paying taxes to those authorities.
I know. That's the irony. The Coast Guard, whatever the version of the Coast Guard there, keeps having to save him. Let's see. His boat capsized west of Shetland, forcing him to be rescued by the Coast Guard. In all, during a series of accidents and mishaps in the North Sea, Hill was to blame for an estimated 5 lifeboat launches and 2 rescue helicopter alerts.
Yeah, that's getting to be money. That's where this shit always falls apart, right?
Right.
Like, they're like, no, we can, it's the People's Republic of Fredonia or whatever. Was that mm-hmm. a Mr. Show thing? And it's kind of like, yeah, that's all well and good. I hope you're enjoying Fredonia until you use our roads to get there. You know, like, there's just like, and especially when you're talking about, like, rescue missions, like, that's a real thing. They passed a law to go back to New Hampshire
right.
for a second. You know, even just, like, people going up in the mountains and being like, I'm just going to take a day hike. And they don't prepare. And they get themselves in trouble up there. And you're always worried for them and their family and the pets that they've taken up there with them. We're not heartless as a society. But also the people who have to do the rescuing are like, you're costing us a lot of money. And you're putting our lives at risk in some of these cases. You know, every time you got to go, you know, up in a helicopter or out into the woods on a mountain or something, like that's real
thing. When the sea is really rolling, it's dangerous stuff to try to execute one of those rescues. I mean, it's there's all kinds of things. There's fuel implications depending on where you are. Like, that's something I hadn't thought of. But, like, when they're doing rescues up in Alaska, a lot of times if the boat's way the heck out there, to get an aircraft, a helicopter or a plane or whatever that can go out and get them, they've got to time it really carefully because they don't want to run out of fuel out there, which is a very real possibility. It's a serious thing. The other thing about this guy is that he also, you know, he was arrested for driving these cars with the made up, you know, with the made up license plate, and he had renounced all of his, you know, British citizenship and everything else. But then it emerged that he had quietly kept hold of his UK driving license. So he avoided one of the penalties because he still had a driver's license, even though he was, you know, the leader of the nation of Forvik, and he had just totally rejected all of the laws and mores of the conventional world, but he would still had his driver's license.
Oh, he's come on, come on, Captain Cal, you know better than that. You can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it too. By the way,
I
that
like
expression,
that you're calling him Captain Cal. I think that's actually pretty. that's pretty catchy. Hey, speaking of things that happen out in the ocean, Andrew, I saw this really beautiful, actually, like photo piece and also written piece about the. I guess you might say growing trend of night surfing. A Dateline San Diego, California. By day, Helmut Eigel is not fazed by 6-foot waves, but it was after midnight on a moonless sea, and surfing is not the same in darkness. Eigel is among a small subculture of surfers who dot coastlines from San Diego to Sydney after sunset, pursuing an adventure that's a subject of curiosity on social media these days, thanks to pro surfers on LED boards.
No.
Visibility is but one of the perils. Sharks, while rare along the coast here, can hunt at night, and surfers cannot count on being rescued by lifeguards, since the lifeguards left hours ago. What they go on to document in this piece is this whole subculture of people. I'm going to say mostly dudes. It's all dudes that are interviewed for the story, who go out in the middle of the friggin' night because, one, there's less there are fewer people out there. I guess surfing is so popular right now, and at certain popular, you know, beaches or breaks, I don't know what the terminology is, in the daytime when it's nice out, or even when it's not nice, but when it's light, there are so many people that you actually can't catch a wave. So these guys are going out in the middle of the night, and they're outfitting their surfboards with like all these like LED lights and things, which is totally attracting sharks.
Oh God.
Think about that shit. Like, is there anything scarier than you're floating in the ocean in the pitch black, the occasional headlights of a car somewhere way in the distance, and you've illuminated the underside of your surfboard. Like, that is asking for a shark to bite you.
Do you have a sense of whether or not they're illuminating their surfboards? I'm looking at these photos here. They're incredible. Are they illuminating the surfboards because for the kind of just for fun and because it'll be very visually stimulating for photographs like this? Or is it also just so that they can kind of see out there so they don't lose? It's probably so they don't lose their board. Primarily.
No, it's so that they can keep track of each other. Surfers wear glow sticks at night so they can keep out of one another's paths on the water. Duct taped to the helmet were orange and purple glow sticks, a longtime night surfer accessory that alerts riders streaking across a wave to paddlers in their path. There was also, I didn't realize this, there's this whole etiquette to surfing. Estimates of the number of surfers worldwide vary greatly. The International Surfing Association says it's about 35 million people. But forecasts indicate that the sport is growing. More surfers means more traffic on the water as they wait for waves, continually battling for position, given that the surfer closest to the curl gets the wave.
Oh, really?
Hell
no.
Now you do. The surfer closest to the curl gets the wave. Crowding also strains surf etiquette, which calls for only one rider per wave.
Oh, that makes sense. I gotta say, I know nothing about surfing. I'll never get on a surfboard in my life. But even I'm feeling the anxiety and sort of anger towards the newbies that these folks would feel. Like, just generally speaking, like that feeling of like, I've been doing this for a long time, whatever it is. For me, it was a coffee shop in high school called Afterwards. And we'd been going there for a long time. And then the freshmen start coming in and they're just like, they're mucking up our good deal. Like, we weren't really supposed to be at this coffee shop anyway. It was during school hours. And then all these like young ones are coming and they're taking up all the tables. And now I'm just airing out my grievances from 1992.
This is the part of Festivus where we do that.
But you know what I mean? Just that feeling of, and now you're making a big ruckus over here. We're going to maybe get in trouble about it. I can just imagine people who've been surfing for like a long time. They have their spot. They have their little community or whatever. And then these bubble gummers come along and they're just like, now there's way too many people out here and a bunch of people who probably just don't respect the unsaid or sometimes said rules of surf culture. I would totally be one of these people who might say, you know what, I'm going to do it at night when the newbies aren't here.
That's like the old I've been telling a lot of hurtful jokes this week.
No,
that
good.
Was like the old
here, I'll mute your mic. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Perfect. That was like
spreadsheet.
You should have seen the other guy.
That was pretty good.
That was like the different space agencies. Can I say, I mean, when I was a kid, it was always like, you know, Pollock. That was the go-to, like, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of. That was all the jokes were like, do you know any Pollock jokes? Which is really weird, even in Seattle. Like, I don't think I even knew a Polish person. I had no animus towards them. I know. Well, that's the thing. And so I want to ask you. Should I say Fredonia just to kind
yeah,
of,
why don't
should
you
I say Norvik?
I like the fact that you've made it clear that you're talking about Pollocks, but we'll just call him Fredonia. I am personally not offended by that.
No, we're gonna go with Forvik.
Okay,
this nation should be good for something, and it's the fact that we can say Forvikians, and that yes. They're the people that do the silly stuff.
How do you confuse a Forvikian, right?
How many Forvikians does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How do you get a one-armed Forvikian out of a tree?
So the space agencies have gotten together, and the NASA says we're very excited to announce that we are going to be the first nation to go to Neptune. And then the Chinese Space Agency says, well, we're going to be the first nation to go to Saturn. And then the Fordvikian Space Agency says, we're going to be the first nation to go to the sun. And everybody says, you can't do that. Are you crazy? You burn up. And they say, no, we're going to go at night.
Right. Now, I got to say, not to make it too serious, but it is pretty cool that Fordvik was able to like kind of afford and establish a space program, though, right?
It's just all about prioritizing, you know, the resources, and it was really literally and figuratively a bit of a moonshot for them, but it really came together. Anyway, back to what the heck is going on in the cold, inky waters off of California. I'll spare everybody my one surfing story that I always tell. Which was just basically that I was surfing in raw sewage, and that's why there were dolphins swimming all around us. And I thought, this is so beautiful. This was the part that really jumped out at me, because you know I'm very afraid of sharks. Like, I'm afraid of sharks, even if I'm in knee deep water. I will have a kind of an intrusive thought when I'm in the ocean. I will have an intrusive thought if I'm in more than like a calf depth of water. Let's see. Sharks are a big part of night surfing, even if they are not actually out there, said James McDonald, who is also a night surfer. The thought is always with me. Brad Benter, who's also part of San Diego's night surfing scene, said he had once spotted a shark's dorsal fin, 100 feet from him under a full moon at about 4:30 a.m. There's so much wrong with that sentence. These days, Benter wears an anklet meant to ward off sharks, although he's not confident it works.
Is it just like a hemp rope and a couple of beads? And it's just kind of like,
probably
any shark with taste won't go anywhere near it.
It's like got a shark tooth on it. Like, look what happened to the last guy.
You should see the other shark.
I just can't believe that. I mean, this is just something that would to. And I like the water. You know, I'm a fan of the maritime life. But to be floating in the ocean when it's totally dark with my board basically a frigging neon sign for sharks. That's like to be standing on a surfboard. I mean, this is – I'm describing a terror dream I would have. You know what I mean? Like for me, a terrifying dream would be I'm surfing. It's night and I see a dorsal fin and I have to stay on the board so I don't die. And now the stakes are extremely high for me riding out this wave.
It's funny that you like I say on the show a lot and only half jokingly that I'm afraid of everything, right? I got major social anxiety. I'm just increasingly afraid of heights and it started off pretty bad. The idea of being in closed spaces, I guess claustrophobia, like these are real things to me. Genevieve, we're watching The Hunt for Red October yesterday, and Genevieve's like, would you spend the night on like a real working submarine? Like that would take you down and under, and would you just spend the night? And I was like, when I was a teenager, even a college student, I think I'd be like, yeah, that sounds cool. And I just wouldn't think about it too much. But just Genevieve asking me that question made my hands sweaty last night. Like mm-hmm. Now it's just like kind of – and I think it kind of builds on itself. Point being, I'm scared of life. Yet I don't have that fear of sharks. And I don't know if that's because from a very young age, I just never had any issues with water. Now, I've got aunts and uncles who will not go swimming in any amount of water. Like they're just – and this is a big part of my dad's side of the family. My grandparents, a bunch of their kids would just never go anywhere. I wouldn't say near the water but would not go in any kind of water. And I just – in the opposite of that. Like when I was a kid, like any – if there was a pool there, I would just jump into it. Sometimes to the distress of my parents. One time I was so excited to be on vacation. I just ran up to the pool and jumped in the deep end with my glasses and my shoes still on. Cause I just was like so excited about it. And I didn't realize until later that my parents like freaked out about it. Like everybody at the pool was freaking out about it. So that idea of sharks, it's just like, maybe I just think it's not going to happen to me. I used to splash around in the ocean as a little kid. I didn't worry about like the tide taking me out. I didn't worry. I guess a little bit we worried about jellyfish because I think my mom got stung by a jellyfish. But it was just like, yeah, try not to be stung by jellyfish.
Sucks having to pee on your mom's leg, doesn't it?
Is that what you do? I don't.
Yeah, that's supposed to be that's supposed to neutralize a jellyfish sting.
Oh, well, I will tell you, nobody gave her a Kent State Golden Flash that I'm aware of that day. But yeah, it was just like for me that's just one thing. Maybe as I get older and, you know, next time I'm in Florida, maybe I will get scared of it. But yeah,
chance. Look, I mean, it's one of those things. That's why I described it as being phobic, because intellectually I know that there's like the chances are infinitesimally small of interacting with a shark. And even if you do, the shark is shark attacks, if you will, or times when people and sharks overlap, it's rarely deadly for the human. You might get, you know, bumped or maybe your foot is bitten. It ain't the movie Jaws. It's so rarely that. I mean, that it's just not likely to happen. But what for me it is that I'm floating on this thing or I'm swimming in this thing and I can't see what else is – I can't see what's around me. And the not knowing of that is very unsettling at times. Not in a swimming pool, although when I was a little kid, I used to be so afraid of sharks that I remember swimming in my grandma's pool at her condo and thinking to myself, I know there's probably not a shark in here, but if there was, wow, God, I would be screwed, and getting out of the pool because I had gotten myself so worked up in my mind about what it would be like for there to be a shark in the pool. That was enough to send me out of there.
Wow. Speaking of dreams, do you want to hear about a dream I had last night?
Absolutely.
It has absolutely nothing to do with anything that we're talking about here. Do I have the Dreamcatcher theme?
You look like a Dreamcatcher came to life.
Ooh, I love it.
I've been having a lot of I've been having a lot of stress dreams recently, and like, you know how when you have a lot of stress dreams, you wake up and you don't feel very well rested. Well, today's stress dream was our boy Jason Pagano over at KUW, aww, public radio producer extraordinaire. He apparently asked me to be a copy editor or some sort of an editor for him at KUW, and so I showed up at 1. And he yelled at me saying that it's not appropriate to be showing up at 1. And I was like, well, I was doing my other job. And then before I could do any copy editing, he made me sit down and take a kind of take notes as the president of the University of Washington told me how to be a copy editor.
That's weird because that's blending different parts of your life because that's the person Genevieve works for.
Right, who Genevieve writes for. So anyway, I don't know if that is interesting to anybody. Okay, let me ask you this. Let me try to make that somewhat interesting. When you have a dream like that with somebody very specific, you know, like it's not Carrie, it's not, you know, your daughter, whatever, like somebody like that, like Pagano. Pagano I've known for 10 years. Probably never has he appeared in any of my dreams before. I have an overwhelming urge to text him. Just had this dream about you. You were my boss for the afternoon and you were kind of mean to me. Like, I did not do that, but it took all of my effort not to do it.
Tell him that would be nice. It's flattering. He's like, he knows that he's on your mind in some capacity.
No, I just saved the gold for TBTL. That's why.
I had a weird stress dream the other day, which is that we had to go on this work trip, and I wanted to stay in a nice hotel, and you volunteered us to stay in the La Quinta.
Huh, that I'll take that to dream court, and I'll say guilty. Guilty as charged. Yeah, sorry about that. So what is it? By the way, have you made your hotel plans there yet? Like, what no. is your – because Amy will probably just hear this anyway.
No, I'm going to stay – I want us to stay in – I don't know why. This is slightly weird. I don't want to be in the same hotel room with you. No offense. But I do want to be in the same hotel for some reason.
Yeah, because we're traveling
strange?
As a team. No, but this is good for me to know because now I'm just going to keep lowering the bar on this shit. You have no idea. I don't care if I have to pay
reverse gaslighting.
Yeah, I'm going to seriously – like, okay, I'm actually going to Google Motel 6s right now. Since I know
then it's going to go down to like – it's going to go down to Airbnb. We have the whole apartment. Then it's going to be Airbnb. It's just we have one of the rooms in the house while the people are there. It just keeps becoming less and less great as far as accommodations go.
You actually bring up a good point. Like I would if I'm making plans for myself, like that house that you and Carrie kind of arranged. Oh, by the way, I still owe you guys for the house in Arizona. Don't let me forget that. You guys got that. You know,
still have 6 months before you'll be bumping up against how long it took me to pay you the $75. I told you, by the way, I know I told you this off air, I think, and probably on the show. But when we were going down to Arizona, Carrie said to me, did you ever pay Andrew back that money? And I said, yeah. And she goes, did you really, or are you lying about it? I was like, how little faith do you have in me?
But then the moment I saw you paid me and said, don't tell Carrie I didn't pay you.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that was one thing. Like, I will stay – when I was looking at the places in Arizona, this is for the first leg of my trip when I was doing family stuff. I was looking for hotels, and I was finding – everything to be very expensive. And I later learned, yeah, everything's expensive around spring training time. And also we were bumping up against the Final Four, which was in Arizona. And so everything was just like way more expensive than usual. Not like outside my family budget. Like, you know, I could swing it. But, you know, more than you'd think to pay for these cheap hotels. And there must be something about me and cheap hotels because I was looking at places. Like, I almost booked a place until I finally started reading some reviews, and all the reviews were just like, no, man, this is like Dead Body Central. Like, don't do it. Like, Dead Bug Central, and like, this is where drug dealers hang out, and like, you just want to do it. I'm still kind of like, yeah, $75
a
night.
Like, is this some sort of like sort of latent subconscious Bukowski kind of deal?
No, it's not. I even know what you mean by that, and I'm not insulted by that because there are these certain kind of like like a Holden. There are certain things in life you feel like you're Holden Caulfielding out, or you're Bukowskiing out, or whatever. Like kind of quasi depressing romantic things. It's really not that. It's just this almost Dave Rossian practicality, I think, that I have, where I'm just like, well, all I need is a bed to crash in, like I say, a TV and a place like to set my computer and stuff. And when I stay
and
in a nice
chair.
Hotel and this paddleball game, when I stay in a nice hotel, like I've told you before, that Virgin Hotel that we stayed in Chicago was my favorite hotel I ever stayed in. It was like kind of hip and trendy, but also very nice and well designed. And the people there were great. And it felt really it just felt superb to me. So I'm not lost on the creature comforts of a nice hotel. But if I'm doing the booking myself, I just kind of instinctively go to this just like bare needs, as long as there are no bugs in the bed type of situation. So anyway, I will make sure the
booking.yeah and you go with booking.yeah.
I'm going to book the nastiest hotel and then you're going to be like, all right, I guess that's where we're staying. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. Not from a female.
I asked the other day if we had any listeners to the show in prison and asked them to get in touch with us. We have not yet heard from anyone except for some people who speak from experience and a person who appears to maybe work at a jail.
Yeah,
a prison.
We actually got a bunch of emails with various kind of experiences working with or volunteering at jails and prisons. But these two emails here, I think, kind of shed the most light on the situation. Because the thing was, sure, when you're in jail or prison, you can listen to the radio a lot and then send letters to radio hosts. But does that apply to podcasting?
Right. Glenn said, I can answer Luke's questions of inmates listening to podcasts. That made me laugh, since I know most in my jail never heard of a podcast. They just aren't the type. What if you go up to the biggest, toughest one, Glenn, and ask them to be on your podcast? Maybe you change some minds, change some hearts. The only internet provided in our jail in Michigan or in the other 80 in our state would be for a law library, and they're locked out of anything else. It's too dangerous to let inmates have free range of the World Wide Web. There is a misconception of jails, generally, that every inmate in prison started in a county jail. Gone are the days of drunks and pot possession filling jails. Now, 95% are felony charges, mainly sex charges and felony assaults. Oh, I see. So, because there's a difference between jail and prison. Jail is usually like the thing that is in the city or like in the county.
County,
and that's like where
you
go there. And you're there for some period of time, but then when you're sentenced, you usually are supposed to go to prison. That's how I understood it. But it sounds like what Glenn is saying is that jails, probably, I would imagine, because of the incarceration rates in this country and how everything is overcrowded, there's probably an effect where jails end up becoming prisons too, because they just have so many people.
Yeah, like a holding space. So he's kind of saying, you think of Andy Griffith as like, oh, you got the town drunk in there or whatever, and it's just kind of like, well, this is just the jail. But he's saying, no, you have these people who are, sexual predators and stuff like that in just jails now, so therefore you can't give them access to the internet.
Right. 95% are felony charges now, mainly sex charges and felony assaults. Sexual predators never quit, and giving them access to the internet is bad. We do provide TV, which is located in the catwalk outside the main cell. In the larger pods, it's mounted on the wall. Someone in the cell must pay for the TV access. The taxpayers do not want to pay for it themselves. I could talk too much about incarceration, so I will sign off. Keep me and my wife laughing. That sounds like a direct order from Glenn, but I think he knows what he's doing. It sounds like he works somehow in the jail there or with people who work there. So that's really interesting. I don't know. Call me a pushover, but I feel like I would be okay with the taxpayers paying for TVs in jail. Not like anything fancy, but somebody in the cell has to pay for the TV. That's
another note I got from somebody who was talking about the internet, which kind of echoed a lot of these that we're reading here. But she mentioned in her email, too, that internet access at the prison that she was familiar with was also paid for by the inmates in some way. And so that also kind of had an impact on their access to it. They're just paying for a little bit because they don't want the taxpayers.
Plus, also, I mean, look, do you really want to be the inmate who's listening to TBTL, who's walking out on the yard going, like, trying to explain to someone what TBTL is? I mean, that's a good way to
just
get
checked. Just going around going, like, power out. Or this, exactly. Like, that's a tuner, bro. Just like that. You're going to get shivved. in no time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fast track to a shivving.
is that a show title?
Maybe.
Kind of dark.
I mentioned that most of my knowledge of how a jail or prison actually works is because we had Drew McFrizz, a.k.a. Mike Frizzell, on the show. We've had him on many times. The guy got friggin' married on the show. But he also did some serious time, did 7 years for bank robbery. I don't know how people get to those old shows. I don't know if they're archived somewhere. But those were, I thought, very interesting interviews about Mike's whole journey, about how he ended up there. Had to do with the with an opioid addiction and just a life that was totally on track and then kind of got off track, but then amazingly got back on track. So we were talking about Mike's experience in prison based on our memories, and then he emailed in. He said, I doubt there are many podcast listeners in the prison system because allowing inmates beyond emails to approved visitors and educational sites, internet access seems fraught. Some bad headlines are likely. So he's kind of echoing what the other person said. Also, he said, this is a reason, Andrew, to reconsider your Hearthstone over TV choice. He actually calls you Andy. Yeah. Better to have something on a screen other than still loading. See, because I asked you if you'd rather have your iPad with Hearthstone in there or a TV, and you went with Hearthstone, but yeah, you're not going to have internet access. So that's
I know. That is rough. That's just like me on an airplane. I can't play my Hearthstone. Like, that's the perfect time to play Hearthstone.
We were talking about also just what our vibe would be in prison, and Drew says, when you are inside, you are still you. It's kind of like seeing where you fit into high school. I say, do what you do best and enjoy. I tried to play or coach sports or talk to girls every possible minute. I guess girls would be the staff.
I don't know, I can't imagine it was a co-ed
prison. That sounds dangerous. Anyway, Luke would always be trying new diets and ways to show off and looking for shortcuts. You think you know me? Andrew would be eating sausage, if you could get sausage in there.
I guess maybe
people put money in your commissary, you could. Andrew would be eating sausage, waiting for his best friend to finish making out with his date and feeling shame.
That's what I was afraid of. I was not built for prison, man. Drew McFrizz was able to survive it. That makes sense to me. Luke, I think that you'd be able to survive it in a different way, and I think that they would just see a big blob of a target the second I walked in there.
No way. You would be running that place.
Are you kidding me?
No, you would be like...
I would be in tears the whole time.
You would be like Jeffrey Tambor in Arrested Development.
No way, man. I'd be like
David
Buster.
Cross in Arrested Development.
I'd be like Buster in Arrested Development. It's a little turd out there.
And then last but not least, Drew says, Andrew called it, by the way. Every football Sunday at breakfast, I would unbox dozens of individual cereal pouches and drop them into my sweatpants. You had mentioned that he would sneak snacks into some area for football watching.
Mm-hmm.
The rustling was so loud, I had to carry on loud fantasy football conversations with my celly as we passed through the metal shack. Stakes were high. So if I understand this, he was pouring cereal out of the small box or whatever, or large box. He was pouring it into his sweats just so it was just mingling with his, like, ankle hairs.
I don't think that's what he's saying. I think that in the little boxes,
dozens of cereal pouches.
He's got the little bags in his pants now, you know, separating his leg hairs from his actual cereal.
God, because that other way sounds gross.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Pat Down would have pegged me at Fruit Loop Positive, and I'd have spent time in the shoe. I think that's a segregated housing unit. I know that from watching one documentary, Andrew. But unloading those sweatpants on the table in front of my boys in the TV room like a boss, it totally made the Apple Jacks juice worth the potentially crunchy squeeze. So what I'm still trying to understand is you weren't supposed to bring cereal into the TV room. I wonder if it was like, what is it, like no eating in the TV room? Or I don't know what the rule was. Like, I'm surprised to hear you, if you had, like, cereal, you weren't allowed to bring it in and eat it while you watched the game.
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask. We can have him back on the show. But, I mean, there must be strict rules about, like, I mean, you probably are not allowed to hoard a whole bunch of anything. You know what I mean? So, however, he was able to get his hands on a whole bunch of cereals instead of just having
maybe
one or two.
Also, aren't chips a better – I'm not trying to relitigate Drew's snack choices. I mean, he was in federal prison. I mean, he had limited options. But wouldn't it be chips for the football
I'm
game?
Assuming that you take what you get. I mean, I don't know. It's prison. I have some pickle chips in the cupboard, by the way. I never buy chips, but the other day I bought a sandwich, so I bought these pickle-flavored chips. You ever have them?
Yes, I have, and I think they're okay in the way that they're really salty, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, they're kind of salty and vaguely pickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is my theory about, I don't know what brand of chips you bought, if they're like Lay's or if they're
just like
Lay's.
Like something that you see, you've seen it before, but it's not a brand I know off the top of my head.
Are they wrap snacks?
I don't think they're wrap snacks.
I lived in D.C., they would sell at the like little hot dog carts on the corner these chips that were called wrap snacks, which would have like a cartoon of a wrap, like a real wrap run. They'd have like... Cameron or Lil Wayne on the wrap snacks.
Oh, no, I didn't know about – oh, I like that. Oh, God.
Yeah, they were cool. I was collecting them for a while. Anytime I'd see a new wrapper, I'd get me a bag of wrap snacks. But, no, this is my theory about the all of the new wild and crazy chip flavors. I think that it's largely driven by printing technology because they can now print pictures of things like a buffalo chicken, like a piece of like a buffalo wing, right? What do you call that?
Just a buffalo wing?
A hot wing.
Hot wing, yeah.
Like you can have like on the cover of like a bag of Ruffles now or a bag of Lay's potato chips, they'll just have an incredibly accurate photo of a hot wing. And then the chips will be hot wing flavor, or it'll be a photo of sriracha, and it'll be like sriracha flavor, or it'll be like a waffle fry and a thing on it. You know what I mean? And it'll be that flavor. And I feel like it's just because they learn how to print on the bags, and they're like, well, shit, we might as well just make these crazy-ass flavors now.
Maybe. Okay, I'm going to go. Okay,
You're buying it.
I'm going to. By the way, I'm on the Wrap Snacks, wrapsnacks.net, which is the official website. These are awesome. They are known as the official snacks of hip-hop. Okay, in my particular case, let's just start with the pickle one because I think there might be some Canadians that are getting a little hot under the collar right now. I do believe that ketchup-flavored chips and pickle-flavored chips have been kind of I don't know if a standard is the right word, but very available in Canada for a long time. So I had some Canadian friends who've been talking about it. And this particular bag that I bought doesn't have a drawing of a pickle on it. I don't believe it's one of those. I can't think of the brand, but you've seen it a million times. It's very plain wrapping with like red and white stripes and then a big blue stripe across it. So in that particular case, I think there's actually a bit of a history. And I'm with you on the flavor. They were just like, meh. I'm kind of in this mode now on the occasion that I go to Subway or something and just get a sandwich. I just kind of like, I like getting something other than a standard chip. Maybe I'm just buying into the trend. I told you that a few months ago I did something similar and I got it was specifically Italian sausage flavored chips at 7-Eleven. Like 7-Eleven has been monkeying around with various, they have hot dog flavored chips, which I have yet to try, Italian sausage flavor and some other ones. I will say, I think that if I had tried that chip without seeing any of the packaging and somebody said, guess the flavor, I think I would have guessed sausage. It did indeed taste like sausage seasoning on this chip. So I'm wondering if it's not just packaging technology, but actual flavor blasting technology.
I see. So maybe it's both happened simultaneously.
And it just becomes like a kind of a trend. It becomes weird and people start talking about it. Because
like, they were having contests. We talked about this like a couple of years ago. There was like a contest to like pick a new kind of chip.
And won like Lay's.
A bunch of money if you designed or if you, you know, recommended. And whatever it was. I want to say it was something sriracha maybe. Sriracha is also very
in vogue. I think that one won the first contest. And they also had a chicken and waffle flavor, I think, won a contest.
Right. Yeah. I'm just looking at Wrap Snacks, too, and I realized that there was a Wrap Snacks bag that had Old Dirty Bastard on it, but under his one of his many names, which was Dirt McGirt, which for some reason I always thought was one of his funniest.
That is.
You know, Big Baby Jesus was another one he used. Osiris. Anyway, there was a Wrap Snacks with Dirt McGirt, and that's I swear great. To God, if I got that bag, I would frame it. Like, I would I would take the chips out. I would sort of, you know, get the air out of the bag. I would like pin it down like a friggin' butterfly in a science room, and I would put it up. I would frame it and put it up on my wall.
God made dirt, and dirt bust your ass. So my favorite non-rhyme
one of the greatest rhymes in hip hop history.
Yeah, because it doesn't rhyme at all. He's rhyming. He's rhyming. He's rhyming. He gets to that line. He's just like, God made dirt, and dirt bust your ass. So
that's
great.
That's right. All right, we got to get out of here, my friend.
All right.
I have a couple. I just wrote down two possible show titles.
Okay.
closer but less classy.
Mm-hmm.
And scared of life.
Scared of life. Feels like
you just said that.
Need something
you just, like,
more
said
there.
You're
yeah,
scared of life.
Yeah. I guess
you need something more specific to this
show.
I think
closer but less classy. I guess I would choose between the two of those. Scared of life feels like a nugget of an idea that didn't get completed. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, do you have any?
No, I don't. But I'll go with closer but less classy.
Okay.
I mean, it's not the best show title we've ever come up with, but God knows it's not the worst. I have a couple of ideas for songs. Obviously, Night Swimming is the obvious one, but how would you feel about Holy Calamity? You know that one, right?
Holy Calamity, Damn Insane. Who is that?
That is Handsome Boy Modeling School.
Yes. Let's do it. Yeah, I love your story. I any chance to hear all Handsome Boy Modeling School. Cool. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening today. We appreciate it. Maybe I'll see somebody at LiveWire tonight with Glenn Washington stopping by from Snap Judgment. And for the rest of you, I guess enjoy the rest of your Thursday. And Andrew and Barbara Bogave will see you tomorrow.
That's
Heck
be
yeah,
fun.
I'm tuning into that show.
That's going to be so much fun. You guys are going to love Barbara so much.
All right. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.